We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Cody and Gold on 610 Sports Radio. On today's show, divisional implications and the Chiefs got problems, man. Chiefs got problems. Special guests include Harrison Butker at 10:30 and Paul Charchian at 1 o'clock. Now, two guys who know how to pop, lock, and drop it, Cody Tapp and Alex Gold.
Thank you.
We're back.
We are back, the full show together. It seems like it's been weeks. I think it's been a week, maybe, since all three of us were in studio together. It is good to have everybody back. Cody, welcome back, my man. People were wondering if you were working on a massive song or something. They didn't know what was up.
So, not a song, but continued efforts. And we can talk about this a little bit later on. Continued efforts for our Creed is Good, Creed Humphrey Hire video reshoot. I want you to know that that takes a fair amount of planning, like quite a bit, so it turns out. So that's what I've been working on.
Don't forget to get your Creed is Good shirts. I went by Ray Gun after the show yesterday. You may have seen also Kyle Brandt received his shirt. So yeah, they're comfortable shirts, good looking shirts. One of these days, I was somewhat worried, but also was expecting you to be wearing your shirt today. I feel like we need to now dedicate. There's a certain day each week where we just wear the Creed is Good shirt.
We all wear it until
just every Thursday or every Friday.
The attention is growing. The attention for Creed Humphrey is going. We started a movement.
We're going to be joined by Harrison Butker coming up in about 30 minutes, Chiefs kicker. Cody's not allowed to be part of the interview. That's another reason why we talked to Harrison. I'll give you full disclosure. We talked to him yesterday because after last year's hoodie fiasco, really, I mean, in the curse from the Harrison Butker hoodie, we decided, you're not allowed. I even asked Harrison Butker about his thoughts on giving you the hoodie and everything. So you'll hear our conversation with Harrison Butker coming up at 10:30 here on Cody and Gold. You missed on Monday, and I said that the Chiefs will have this division wrapped up in 3 weeks. Win against the Broncos. In 11 days, they play three division games. Win against the Broncos, Chargers, Raiders. The Raiders actually before the Chargers game. Now, you asked me, what will we be saying, though, if the Chiefs lose on Sunday to the Broncos about the division chances?
I know no one wants to entertain it, but the Broncos are a competitive football team who have beaten teams as good as the Chiefs so far this season. And as much as I thought that they were just going to go shrivel up and die, they started off 3-0 and then they lost 3 in a row. And I'm like, they're just going to go die and be bad in a corner away from everyone else. Since then, they are still a competitive football team who wins games against teams sometimes you don't think they should beat. They're not a great team by any means. They're borderline good, but they have a good enough defense and do just enough offensively to survive every week. Because this is yet again another week where it's life or death in the division. And I don't think that we should just ignore that because we want to just be like, they're going to beat the Broncos and it's no problem. And we're not worried about it. Because while you were gone, I said the Chiefs are going to win out the remaining of the regular season games. So it's not like I'm predicting them to lose this game on Sunday. But if they lose, then they're not in first place in the division anymore. They've lost another AFC game. They've lost another game in the division. And they are staring down the barrel of it. It is no longer easier to get to the playoffs through the division anymore.
See, I disagree with that.
And you have to start looking at other options.
So I disagree, though. You're not wrong. I think what the narratives would be if the Chiefs lost to the Broncos, it would be fascinating because suddenly you'd have to look at Denver a little bit differently. You'd be like, wait a second here. The Broncos beat the Cowboys this year and they would have beat the Chiefs and Chargers in back-to-back weeks. What's going on here? But as far as the path, I would disagree with this because the Chargers have Cincinnati, we know, this week. on the road, and I think the Chargers are slight underdogs in this game. And if the Chargers lose on Sunday to the Bengals, if the Chiefs were to lose to the Broncos, I still don't believe that the Broncos would win the division and the Chargers wouldn't have gained a game on you. And so I don't think actually, as long as the Chargers would lose to the Bengals, I disagree with the path gets way, 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 way tougher.
You think it's still just because beat the that's other how teams big in your the division.
That's how big the
but
Chargers
Broncos.
You're locked
into the four at that point, right?
Yeah, as far as for seeding in the AFC.
Yeah. You're done with any conversation around 3-2-1 then?
Depending on the other teams, though, if you're not going to get the first round bye, the difference between the 2 and the 4 may not matter a whole lot, depending on what you believe is actually the tougher one. Like,
no, well, probably not.
You know what I mean? Like, so depending on the matchups, we don't know who's going to be the 1 seed. You might actually prefer to play the 1 seed instead of the 2 seed in your second round game. We don't know. If that 1 seed's still Tennessee, you might say, yeah, it actually really does matter. You'd almost maybe rather be the 4 versus the 2 in that scenario. If you get to play the 1 seed Tennessee Titans versus maybe you're afraid of playing the 1 seed New England Patriots, for example.
I can't believe we've come this far in the Patriots. I know you guys, it's like, the fact that the Patriots are even a conversation of this is annoying. Not that it's wrong, just, well,
why?
I'm just annoying.
Because only 1 year removed from not having them in the mix, now they're back in the mix just a year later. Yeah, that's disgusting.
And honestly, it's just because Bill Belichick is a coaching problem. He's the only time you go into a matchup and you say, all right, can Andy Reid be outcoached on a regular basis in this game? He's like one of two guys you might say that about against Andy Reid. Everyone else, if you're doing the little check mark, you know, it's, hey, keys to the game. Here are the 5 things. Head coach is clearly with the Chiefs. And every other possible game, at least when it comes
to
the Patriots.
It's still different, though, when it was Belichick, Brady versus Reed and Mahomes. It's still Belichick, Mac Jones. MJ12 is his thing he's tried to trademark now. Very original, because TB12, he said, why don't I do MJ10? MJ10 for Mac Jones.
It doesn't sound nearly, I don't know, they both sound stupid, if we're being honest. MJ12 and
Mike,
MJ10.
What are you doing?
Also, MJ is a pretty famous person.
Yeah, I kind of recall.
There's a couple of famous MJs. Huh. You can't just start taking MJ now. You're a little down.
Yeah, I think it was a mistake.
Yeah, there's a few people slightly more famous than you. But again, and the Bills and the Patriots play each other this week, so that's going to go a long way in the, because they play each other 2 of the next 3 weeks, I think. Essentially, the AFC East is going to get decided sometime in the next 3 weeks, too. So you might have, I think the Titans have already firmly, I think they're going to, I still think they're going to win the division, even though they're playing bad. I know they could still lose it. I still think they're going to win the division.
So do I, yeah.
And you might feel less good about the 1 seed.
Yeah, I don't feel great about that. Nobody's healthy on that team. I don't feel good about the Titans as the 1 seed anymore.
No, probably not.
I didn't expect everybody to end up on
IR. Might be the
IR.
New England Patriots as the 1 seed if they beat Buffalo this week. If they beat Buffalo this week, how can you argue it?
Yeah, they have the Colts in between there too. Like, that's my issue with them as the 1 seed. Like, if they sweep, I mean, if the Patriots get to 11 wins and that means they've won 9 in a row and they would have beat the Bills, Colts, and Bills in the 3 week period, well, then, yeah, then they are going to be a number one seed
because the last 2 games with
Jacksonville
Jacks.
And Dolphins, even though the Dolphins are playing better. I just find it hard to believe that the Patriots are going to win their next 3 games as well. Like, at minimum, they're going to split, I think, with the Bills. And then the Colts game, we'll see. This is the time where the Patriots, and deservedly so, are getting talked about as the hottest team in football because they are. And the love, I just struggle because it's still a rookie quarterback.
And that's where this all kind of comes back to the Chiefs is. It's how quickly in the AFC this year you can lose all your goodwill. The Chiefs have won 4 games in a row. They have beaten every quality opponent. Remember, we had the whole thing, 18-4 going into this 3-game stretch. They went 3-0. If you told me 3-0 ahead of that, I'm like, well, okay. I'd have taken 2-1, and I would have been... I could have lived with 1-2 probably going into that based on the way the team was playing with all the divisional games behind it. But it's like you lose all your goodwill if you lose to the Broncos this week because no one takes them serious. Nick, what game was it earlier this year? We had the conversation because we came in on a Monday and you were like, none of us saw this coming. So what the hell happened? Because that feels like this game now. Since then, any game the Chiefs would have lost, we would have had the conversation and been like, yeah, I mean, I could definitely have seen them losing to the Packers. Or
it was the Ravens game.
The Ravens game.
Because it was early, and every single person in Kansas City saw a...
Hurt. It was going to be a bloodbath.
People were talking about how are the Ravens even going to hang in this game.
Yeah. But that's what it feels like for the Broncos, right? That's the conversation. Same vibe. They're going to lose this game. We will all be on money and be like, how the hell did this even happen? This is the team they're supposed to destroy. Teddy Bridgewater is their quarterback. Vic Fangio is their coach. They've got a great defense, mind you, but that's it. That's the core of this thing. So like, what do you do beyond that? That's where I just, and I don't think they're going to lose this game. I'm just curious to know how far, because I think people's confidence level will plummet.
Yeah, it'll change the confidence of big picture on the idea that the Chiefs were back if they lose. Yeah. But I don't think it means the Chiefs are in massive danger of losing the division, thanks to the Broncos actually beating the Chargers last week. It'd be a different story if you told me the Chiefs lose to the Broncos and the Chargers had already beat the Broncos last week. Well, then, yeah, then that Chargers Thursday night game is an absolute must win. Suddenly there's a chance that Thursday game against the Chargers may not be a must win because of the way the Chargers are playing. They lose to Cincinnati. That Thursday night game isn't as meaningful as we once thought. So that's why Sunday night against the Broncos is a huge game, because if you can beat the Broncos on Sunday, then it takes some pressure off that Chargers game 2 weeks later.
I mean, wait, cause it's like, you can afford to lose one, because we just assume everyone else in the AFC West is losing another game somewhere. Because it's a super competitive division, but nobody is standing head above.
And for the record, I disagree with you on that they're going to win out. I do think, as we've seen this whole year, there will be one game that nobody sees coming. And again, hopefully it's not this Sunday. Nobody sees coming, right? That the Chiefs will drop. I just think the NFL has shown us that this year, that there will be one more surprise loss for Kansas City. I've made a lot of comparisons to 2019, as we all have, and I think there's a ton of similarities there. And in that scenario, they won out. But I still think they trip up at some point, like whether it's Cincinnati later on. I think maybe it is that Chargers game. That's still the most dangerous one on a short week, even though the Chargers are slipping.
Chargers road.
But it's still just because of the short week is one we have to acknowledge. But the great thing about this team for this year and for the long term is suddenly Rashad Fenton. Rashad Fenton suddenly has given you a legit number two corner, and he's playing, if you believe the Pro Football Focus grades, just about as good as any defender under the age of 25. Think about that. That is something. You want some things we never thought we'd be saying. Rashad Fenton, according to Pro Football Focus, is the second highest graded defender under the age of 25 in football. The only guy higher, Max Crosby, a stud pass rusher for the Las Vegas Raiders. He's ahead of Antoine Winfield Jr., AJ Terrell, and Nick Bosa.
That's a pretty good company.
Rashad Fenton. Now, Pro Football Focus grades aren't everything by any means, but this is under 25. Guy on his rookie contract still has
a year after this
another year after this year available to Kansas City on a very cheap deal, because he was a late round, another sixth. Late rounder for you. This still continues to kind of be the perfect zone for Brett Veach, late round success. This is another example of that. Darius Sneed was the big story and still is. But now I add Rashad Fenton into that conversation as well, and how well Brett Veach has been able to find talent late and undrafted.
Before I wax poetic about Fenton's season, and he's had a great year, what the hell was the team doing defensively for the first six games of this year? They screwed up in three major areas. They started Mike Hughes over Rashad Fenton, who is now playing like Jalen Ramsey out there. They started Daniel Sorensen over Juan Thornhill, who Juan Thornhill's name we haven't had to say in 6 weeks, right? Hasn't made a mistake in 6 weeks. Just been fine. Everything's no big deal. And they started Ben Neiman instead of other available linebackers at that time. It's like, what were you guys doing defensively this entire time? Because your plan going into it was bad. I don't know what happened in training camp or what you saw from who, but you saw all the wrong things from the wrong people, because you were going with the wrong bodies. And maybe some of this is like the old adage of like gamers. Like, well, you know, you get in a game and then you find out people play
back to
different.
I think it goes back to the trust.
I hate it, though.
I know.
You know what? I hate it. It's the same thing the Royals are doing with Ryan O'Hearn.
Yeah.
Like when Alec Lewis is sending out tweets.
Bro O'Hearn.
Like, I love Alec. But like when someone's like, hey, explain to me. You cover the Royals. Explain to me why they're going with O'Hearn. And he's like, oh, because he knows what it's like to be a big leaguer. Okay, he knows what? To tip the clubby? Yeah. Like, he doesn't know how to hit, so why does it matter that he knows how to
be? You and I can have this conversation later, because I think it is that Ryan O'Hearn thing is something only social media actually cares about, the fact that he got his contract tendered. Nobody else gives a damn.
No,
I mentioned it briefly yesterday. We can do this a little bit later,
no,
too.
No, it's fine. The tender part of it doesn't really matter. It's a lot like signing a minor league deal.
Exactly.
Long term, it doesn't mean anything, but you and I both know the Royals' history is Ryan O'Hearn will get 400 major league at-bats next year, and that's why it should matter.
So back to the trust thing with the Chiefs.
It's trust. Yeah. The Royals do the same thing, and it's not always a bad thing. Having someone in a position that you know you can trust is a big deal, but not if they are the severely more limited players. So now that the Chiefs have figured that out, that's when Brett Veach's draft strategy starts to look off a lot better the last 2 years versus the first two. Because if we look at the first 2 years, look, you're still not going to feel good about yourself, okay? You're just not. But if you look at the last 2 years' worth of drafts, there are a lot of starters and a lot of rotational players that start building the roster that make you feel great.
Sneed, Fenton, Warden, Dana, Gay, Bolton, all on defense, all under the age of 25. Now, a couple of those are higher picks, right? Second round picks in the linebacker cases, and certainly sure. Creed Humphrey has been just as good as anybody on the offensive line of football this year.
Fourth and sixth rounders, and then Wharton's undrafted.
And then, yeah, on the offensive side, it's Creed, it's Smith, it's Niang, it's Clyde. I know people are down on Clyde, but still, overall, he's a starter on your team. He's going to continue to be a starter on your team for a couple more years at least. And I think if you look at Brett Veach, if you're wondering what will change the narrative, which has been, you know, some of the draft success, or in some people's cases, lack of success, and you mentioned 2018. How many more years away are we from where, like, we all acknowledge what happened in 2018 with Breland Speaks? At some point, I don't give a damn about that anymore. How many more years away are we from that? Is it A, we're like 3 years from that? Is it that this next year's draft, they draft a stud pass rusher and wide receiver, and then everybody's good? Because at some point, I don't want to hear about 2018 anymore. Like, it's, I'm not saying it's unfair right now, but in 2024, I don't give a damn about the Breland Speaks pick anymore.
No, because it's because not really gonna see you as a draft anymore.
Yeah, exactly. And so maybe we're only a year away from that, because what Brett Veach has done the last 2 years, which is the most recent, guys make mistakes, you learn on the job a little bit. Like, we've seen an improvement in draft evaluation, but I think a lot of people just want to see, all right, that star player, right, at a premium position.
Wide receiver, defensive end.
Once that happens, I mean, everything, man, he's hitting on kind of core guys in the draft, not the superstars yet, in terms of positional value. Like, I think Creed Humphrey, for his position, is a star, but nobody's going to call a center a superstar.
But if we're ranking, right, 22 positions on the field, it's where do you put center?
But, like, add Fenton in the mix, man. He finds these guys late in the draft. If you have to have some guys that are on rookie contracts at positions that maybe don't stand out as much, linebacker, center, right guard, he's been hitting home runs at those positions here as of late, man. And it's awfully impressive.
It's, if you want to, because he has done a lot better. And I've been a critic of Brett Veach's draft strategy, generally speaking, because I think he trades up way too much. And there's a couple of years worth of evidence that he got pretty much no talent. He spent 2 years in the draft in 18 and 19, and he got one rotational player. That's it. That's all he got. Then in the following 2 years, he got some rotational-ish players, McCall Hardman, right, Dana, some guys who do good things but are limited, and we know that. And now he's gotten a couple of, like, now he might have gotten an all-pro. Like, you know, last year's draft, he might have gotten an all-pro in Creed Humphrey. So I'm not going to knock that just because of the positional. Because if right now Clyde Edwards-Helaire was an all-pro, I don't think I'd care so much that it was at running back, is the point. But at the very least, he's a starter, two linebacker starters. We know that they get plenty of rotational stuff out of this. And they have fun, you know, and obviously Trey Smith should be a part of this conversation, because that's two offensive line starters. And they're in maybe three, if Niang hangs on here for a few years, will be a part of that conversation too. But for, you know, for him to ever get fully absolved for a few years of some of this, someone wants to see him get defensive end or wide receiver right. Those two positions and those two positions alone. Maybe if they found a star corner, but people are still having questions. And Rashad Fenton is playing like that, and we both think Snead is the better player. So it's not like they've had a hard time finding cornerback talent. That's an important position to be cheap at. And they have done just fine there. Like, the key to all of this is, be good at what you're good at drafting at. You just can't be bad at all of the expensive positions. All of the expensive positions are quarterback, wide receiver, defensive end, and corner. So, like, quarterback, they're good. They're expensive at that, but they don't need to look for anybody, and they don't need Brett Veach to, like, be good at that. First, he was, obviously, because he was a part of the whole process, but they don't need to be good at that for the next 15 years, so okay, fine. Wide receiver, he's been bad at. Defensive end, he's been bad at. And then corner, he's been great at. You just haven't noticed it, because if he had spent second-round picks on both Fenton and Snead, and they were playing this way, we would be having very different conversations about it. Same as if he had spent fourth and sixth rounders on the two linebackers, right? Some of this is just positional value. But if they're all going to be starters, I'm not going to complain too much. I think we're a year away from letting 2018 go, where we don't have to bring
that
up.
I was wondering.
Because I do think that your draft strategy in year one is a lot different than your draft strategy in year five.
Nope, no question. And then that gets you back into the conversation of also where, you know, some people don't want to hear it, but where are you drafting? Like, are you drafting at 28 to 32 consistently, and the challenges that presents? And I'm not saying that there aren't talented players that you can get at 32, because there's obviously that there's examples of that every single year that it happens. But based on the position you're looking at, like, we know this past year they were clearly needing to get a left tackle, and at pick 30, you know, at pick 31, they didn't feel they could trade up and find a tackle realistically that would be able to give them the production that they're getting right now. So we know they traded for Orlando Brown Jr. And over the last couple of weeks, I think some of the focus on Orlando Brown probably has been turned down a little bit.
Yeah, because he hasn't looked bad.
The team's winning number one. Yeah. And the other part, he's held his own like he should.
It's almost like a run-blocking left tackle needs a half a season to get used to his new scheme.
Exactly.
Weird.
It's a good spot, obviously, for them to be in as well. Coming up in 10 minutes, Harrison Butker, Chiefs kicker, going to join us. We'll get his thoughts. I also want confirmation from Harrison Butker, what Tommy Townsend told us a couple weeks ago, which was that he made a 60-yard field goal in practice. Tommy Townsend said, you can ask Butker about it. So we will. We will. Harrison Butker joined us in just a little bit. But we're really excited. Yesterday we mentioned once Cody got back, we wanted to have a fun announcement for us on the show, something we're really excited to be able to do here in a couple of weeks. On December 15th, the Cody and Gold Toy Drive at Jefferson's in North Kansas City. A portion of the sales going to the Boys and Girls Club of Greater Kansas City. And, of course, wanting you to drop off toys. You remember we had our Santa conversation, how there's a major shortage for Santas in this country.
Look, it's a big problem. There aren't enough mall Santas, which means you're going to have a hard time getting to wait in some impossibly long line just to get some picture of kid with your Santa that you're going to put on your fridge for a month. And then it's going to go in a book and you're going to laugh at 15 years from now. Why not have that picture with Santa be with me as Santa or Gold as Santa?
Or specifically,
or Nick as
me
Santa.
As Santa, because I believe that I would make,
to make it clear,
of the best Santa Claus.
This is a competition and we are up against each other for who will be the best Santa. And I'm going to win because I like to win things.
What makes you think you would be the best
Santa? I'm a dad, man. I get it.
So you think we're going to scare off the kids? Is that what you're trying to say?
I'm an uncle.
So am I.
Yeah, it's pretty much the same thing, right?
Nephews, sons. I mean, it's the same thing.
I know how to be jolly.
Do you?
I know how to smile and laugh and ask kids what they want for Christmas. What more is there to it?
I mean, that's a lot of the job, admittedly. But I think some of it's just an aura.
Are we going to have these kids fill out exit surveys after their Santa experience?
I think we'll be able to judge right away without even exit surveys.
Like if a kid starts crying, deduct 2 points.
Yeah, the crying of the kid, you're in big trouble.
But if you need a picture with a Santa Claus, we're going to be there dressed up as Santa Claus at Jefferson's from 4 until 7 on December 15th. All we ask is that you bring a toy for the toy drive. And then if you want to get some wings while you're there or whatever, a portion of all the sales, 10% actually, will go to the Boys and Girls Club of Greater Kansas City.
Yeah, I'll be the Santa drinking a beer if you're looking for
which
Santa. I think
we're all going to be that Santa.
And I think,
very clear,
honestly, it would be on brand for Santa Claus to be drinking Bud Heavy.
Ooh.
Definitely.
And maybe it's because of the Clydesdale horse commercials, but Bud Heavy has a very Christmas feel to it.
Yeah, so we appreciate Jefferson's. We're excited to partner up with them. And obviously a portion of those sales from 4 to 7 o'clock, that's on Wednesday, December 15th, going to the Boys and Girls Club of Greater Kansas City, keeping the money right here in the Kansas City area. And yeah, just bring any brand new unopened toy on December 15th.
I mean, I feel like now I want to strategize a little bit because, like, I think there's some things I can do to maybe grease the wheels here.
Look at you already trying
cheat.
To. Look,
you're going to cheat in a charitable
not
endeavor.
Cheat.
Unbelievable.
Not cheat. I want people who decide to bring their kids here, or if you're just an adult and want a picture with Santa, also fine. I don't know if dogs are allowed, so probably not that.
Are there no depths with which you're not willing to stoop to?
Correct. To win? No. This is like, you know, all this.
It's not about winning. It should be about the kids.
It is. It's
the
both.
Kids of Kansas City.
By winning, I will help the kids more. That's the way I view it. The more we pump this up, the more people show up, the more kids we help. Look, you don't want to wait in some long-ass line at Crown Center. No one wants to do that. Just
with
come.
With some creepy old guy with maybe a checkered past. Maybe. Yeah. Reckless speculation.
You at least know us.
913-576-7610. Someone says, Cody probably wins because he's the fattest. Not trying to be rude or mean.
Wow.
That is rude and mean.
Just speaking the truth.
That's textbook rude and mean.
Both of those things.
Someone says, Gold
I'm
is
working gr- on it.
Gold's going to be bad Santa. Again, we're all going to be drinking beer.
What's your experience with Santa? I mean,
kids sitting on your lap.
Growing up with Hanukkah, when did Santa become a part of anything you did as a child? I'm worried you don't have enough childhood Santa experience.
I'm worried about your qualifications as well.
Yeah, so here's the funny thing. The funny story with that actually is at one point in time, because of course we went to like public schools or whatever, like everybody else. And so we were wondering when we were little, at least I'm told this is what we said from my parents, we were like, why? How come Santa doesn't bring the Jewish kids toys? Was actually something in like, I think kindergarten or first grade or whatever was once said. My mom felt terrible. So I kid you not, for a few years when we were really little, she would, on Christmas, would still put out some toys
because
we were very confused and didn't understand the process. So yeah, that's all I know. Text line says their father plays Santa at Crown Center and he is loved.
Okay, well, I'm not saying
there are some good Santas out there.
I'm going to text you and get some tips, some advice there.
Smart.
But yeah, tall, skinny Santa, the kids probably will gravitate towards Cody.
You're going to have to get some enhancements.
But you've got a beard and I don't.
Yeah, but we're all going to have I'm assuming you're getting the costume that has...
Oh, yeah, speaking of which, does anyone have a line on a Santa costume?
Yeah, we need Santa costumes, multiple, perhaps, because we come in varying shapes and sizes here on Cody and Gold.
So it's the Cody and Gold Toy Drive. You'll continue to hear us talking about that for the next couple of weeks. We're really excited to do this, though. December 15th from 4 o'clock to 7 o'clock at Jefferson's in North Kansas City. Again, bring unwrapped, unused toys to Jefferson's. And a portion of the sales, you come by, have some wings, have some beers. A portion of the sales going to the Boys and Girls Club of Greater Kansas City. Coming up next, we check in with the Chiefs kicker, Harrison Butker. And we don't let Cody ask a single question after his hoodie jinx from a year ago.
Cody and Gold, weekdays 10 to 2. 610 Sports Radio.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Continuing to get suggestions for how we should dress up as Santa for our Cody and Gold Toy Drive coming up on December 15th at Jefferson's in North Kansas City. Proceeds of sales going to the Boys and Girls Club of Greater Kansas City. A lot of suggestions. Someone wants to know, is Nick going to let the dad sit on his lap? Well, Nick?
I have both an age and weight limit for this event.
Okay, just checking. Just making sure. We'll get into what today now is for baseball, which is a lockout in just a little bit, and what it actually means for the owners and players this go-around, as it is official. The players locked out, though. The players' photos are scrubbed from all the team sites. You can go to Royals.com. There's no photos of Royals players anymore. It's just such a weird setup with the players now being locked out from Major League Baseball. But each and every Thursday, we're always excited to be joined by another member of the Kansas City Chiefs and had a chance to catch up with Chiefs kicker Harrison Butker. And I started asking Harrison about the bye week. You got to like it, falling on Thanksgiving. And I imagine it doesn't get much better than that when it comes to timing for a bye.
It's perfect. I think that's the best you could ask for. It's either Thanksgiving or Christmas, but Christmas is too late in the season for the bye. I think 2017, we also got the bye week. It might have been after playing the Cowboys as well. And then we got the bye week, but it was super great to see family and have a bye over Thanksgiving.
So what was Thursday like? I mean, are you just like everybody else just sitting around eating and did you watch all three of those football games or do you step away for a little bit?
I definitely stepped away. You know, normally I try to catch the Sunday night football game, maybe see the Monday or Thursday night, at least watch the highlights. But for the bye week, I was trying to tap out of football as much as I could. And you know, cooking's kind of a hobby of mine, so I was basically in the kitchen on Wednesday and Thursday just having fun cooking with my wife and my parents.
All right, now what role did you have in the cooking? So this past week was the first time I actually smoked the turkey, but the family did not trust me enough to have it be the only turkey. So they still had the normal turkey. They said, you can smoke the turkey, but I don't think they had any faith in me.
How did it turn out?
It was fun, yeah. I mean, I everybody said it was good. They said you can make it again next year, so I'm going to go ahead and take that as a compliment that that's something that I can do again.
Nice. Well, I like Gordon Ramsay a lot, and he's got a video on YouTube for how to make his turkey, and he stuffs it with some butter and herbs and lemon juice, kind of between the meat of the turkey and the skin, which is kind of creative. And then the gravy was homemade as well from the onions and the bacon that was on top of the turkey. It was pretty elaborate. It turned out really well. And then I loved eating sweet potato casserole, sweet potato souffle, I don't know, however you say it. That's one of my favorites. And obviously we made like two pumpkin pies, a pecan pie. And it was a small crowd, but we did a lot of cooking. We're also gluten-free, so we made homemade gluten-free Hawaiian rolls, which I know gluten-free sometimes can be like just sandy and disgusting, but that was delicious as well, and a bunch of other side dishes as well. It was really good.
Now, you played college football down at Georgia Tech, and so rivalry-wise, there's no question who it was. It was the Georgia Bulldogs for you guys, and you get a rival this week in the NFL. It's the Chiefs. It's the Broncos. College football, though, is more associated with rivalries. Does this week, I know you've been in the league now maybe long enough where it does, but does this rivalry, does it feel like that for you? I know for fans it does, but for players, do you guys get up a little bit more for the Broncos?
Definitely. I think any team in the AFC West you're getting up for, and all the teams in our division are so close. It's a huge game for us. You know, I think in college there's a little bit more there because you kind of get indoctrinated a little bit. When you show up as a freshman, everyone's talking about, at least in our case, you know, don't wear red, we hate Georgia, to hell with Georgia, all those things. And you don't really get that in the NFL too much. Maybe the week before you hear a little bit. But I think everyone's just focused on doing their job and making sure we are bringing our best game to Arrowhead against the Broncos.
We're talking to Chiefs kicker Harrison Butker here on Cody and Gold. And sticking with college football, how much do you still follow it? I mean, this last couple of days has been absolutely nuts with the coaching carousel and seeing guys that are at programs that are in position to win national championships still willing to leave those situations.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I follow Georgia Tech football, obviously watch a lot of them. But as far as all the coaching changes, I haven't been paying attention too much. But, I mean, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I know enough to speak on it.
Sitting back, though, and going back to you guys here for a little bit and get away from college football, just seeing where the narratives outside the organization, maybe the panic outside the organization a month or so ago to where you guys were, now you're atop the AFC West, one of the best records in the AFC. Do you feel some of that panic, that concern was warranted considering how the team was playing at the time?
You know, there was a lot of talk going on. I tried to not listen to it, and I think a lot of the players on the team as well were trying to stay locked in and focused. That was one of the messages that Coach Reed was continually preaching to us about how, you know, he's been with a lot of teams that have started out like this and that have turned it around. And, I mean, that's really what we've done. We're kind of on a streak right now, putting together a lot of great wins. But my mindset, I think definitely Coach Reed, probably the whole coaching staff and a lot of the players, is just try to ignore what other people are saying and focus on how we can improve, and just coming every day to practice with that mindset of getting better, getting 1% better. So, I mean, we obviously started out losing a lot of games that we haven't really been used to. We haven't really been used to doing that the past two seasons, so that was a little different. But I just think it speaks to the type of guys we have on our team and the coaches that we have about not hanging our heads and just trying to improve and focus on what we can control to get better.
Are you still like the only kicker with a clothing line? We had you on the show last year and we asked you about it. Is that still the case, you think?
I'm not sure. You know, I've just wanted to be able to provide something for the fans. Usually a lot of the kids that want to support me, you know, they want to get a jersey or something, but maybe they can't find it, and they could at least get something with my logo on it. So I've loved being able to provide something for them. But as far as other kickers, I'm not sure. You'd probably have to do the research to figure that out. I definitely haven't.
I think when we talked to you last year, you kind of mentioned you know, fashion a little bit, and one of the better guys dressed on the team. Do you think you're the best guy dressed guy on the team?
As far as suits, I think I could probably take that title. But you know, there's so many guys that are very creative, I guess, in the type of genre that they're dressing in. Sometimes it's very put together traditional three-piece suit. Other times it's a little bit more modern, kind of the fashion trends that are going on, maybe streetwear. I kind of keep it simple, I guess, with the jacket, sometimes tie, sometimes it's a turtleneck, but it's usually around the same type of dress. It's something I love. It's something that helps me, you know, be in the right frame of mind going into the game. So I probably can't say I'm the best dressed, since I don't have a wide enough genre, I guess, of clothes that I wear. So I think probably Kelsey, you know, he's always got something creative every week.
Last year, you gave my co-host Cody one of your hoodies, and I'll be honest, our listeners said we jinxed you from that point forward, and so we didn't let him wear the hoodie anymore from that point going forward. So I just want to let you know that's like now there's no concern. He has the hoodie, but he doesn't wear it on game days anymore or anything like that. But it was a nice hoodie.
Yeah, I mean, whatever it takes to help me kick better, I appreciate it.
Do you buy into? I mean, our kicker. How superstitious are kickers? I mean, do you have anything you do on a regular basis?
No, I'm not very superstitious. I think a lot of kickers are, a lot of coaches are. I'll throw that in there. But for me, I just think with my engineering background, I'm very mathematical, and I just got to focus on the things that I could control and increase the probability of those kicks going through the uprights. So if it's going to affect me and make me better, I'm all for it. But I try not to think about random stuff like what clothes I wear for the game, if that affects me performing well or not, I guess.
Just another minute or so here with Chiefs kicker Harrison Butker. And I was watching Monday Night Football earlier this week, and Washington had to go for a fourth down because their kicker was hurt, unfortunately. It would have been like a 21-yard field goal. And I was thinking, is there nobody on the roster that can make a 21-yarder? Now, we had Tommy Townsend on the show, and he said that we could ask you this. He said, Butker will back me up. He claims he made a 60-yarder in a practice at some point in time. So, A, is that true? And B, is there a position player that you could point out that can make a 21-yard field goal for some reason if you guys needed it?
So I can confirm Tommy did hit a 60-yard field goal. However, it's kind of 1 out of 10, you could say, of him going in. I don't know. 21-yarder he probably would have. He does have a draw to his swing. But he's probably the best field goal kicking punter I've been around. So he's very impressive. And then I'd say the position player that would kick if Tommy couldn't for whatever reason be Dan Sorensen. He can, I don't know if he played soccer, but his son loves kicking. So I think his son's got a jersey of mine. He loves butt kicker. He loves everything about kicking. I don't know if that's rubbed off on Dan, and maybe Dan's kicking a little bit more. But before Tommy was on the team, I guess back in 2019 and before, Dan was going to be our backup kicker or kickoff guy especially. So Dan Sorensen.
On Sunday against the Broncos, it's my cause, my cleats this weekend. What do you have in store for everybody?
Yeah, my cause will be Wounded Warrior Project. So there'll be green and black colored cleats. I'll probably wear them for the game. The right one will just have Wounded Warrior Project, their logo on. And the left one will actually have the names of the 13 people that died in Afghanistan at the airport. And then we'll be having the platoon commander of that unit, Lieutenant Farm, will actually be coming to the game as well. So super excited to partner with Wounded Warrior Project and have those on my cleats for the game.
Yeah, always a cool weekend in the NFL. The NFL allows you guys to support some great causes out there. And Harrison, really appreciate you giving us some time, man, and best of luck the rest of the way.
No problem. Thank you, guys.
Harrison Butker with us here on Cody and Gold. Whatever we have to do to avoid you getting another hoodie, that's what we did. We said, there's no question. I'm sure he's going to kick great the rest of the season, but it felt like it was better for you to sit this one out because of what happened last year with the hoodie and a little bit of the chaos, and that's why the hoodie ultimately was sold in the Cody and Gold Garage. I didn't mention to Harrison that we sold the hoodie for a good cause or anything. I didn't want him to know that
part
of it.
What do you think the premium item is going to be? Because that went for the most money that wasn't something Bob Kendrick donated us.
Yeah, the tour.
What do you think is the premium item in this year's Cody and Gold Garage sale? Is it
the second annual Cody and Gold Garage
the
sale?
The Creed Humphrey jersey that I have already custom ordered?
I have a feeling it'll be, because it's going to be a halftime show worn Creed Humphrey
That's
jersey.
The good kind of used. Mm-hmm. Not used that like knocks off value. That's the kind of used that only increases value.
That's right.
For someone who might already want to own a Creed Humphrey jersey. You know, is there any way we can get him to sign it? That's really best case scenario in this.
At the end
it's
of it?
It's for charity.
After the...
Yeah.
I have a feeling we could probably make something happen when it comes to that. Thanks to Harrison Butker joining us. We got our answer, though, because of the Monday Night Football game this past week, which the Washington football team couldn't kick a field goal from 21 yards, so they had to go for it. So I was wondering who the emergency kicker would be.
He said
Dan Sorensen. Now, he said Tommy Townsend, he said, might be the best field goal kicking punter in football. But he said if for some odd reason that both of them weren't available, Dan Sorensen's the guy. There you go. Value.
He brings it. He's the everyman.
Does it all.
Plays everywhere. Available for any reason. I'm surprised they haven't asked him to play offense yet.
That would be something. That would be something.
Real Bill Belichick style from back
that
in the
would
day.
That would be something. I will point. I'm glad you brought that part up, actually. The last time we had a punter on, Tommy Townsend threw a pass in the game. We just had Butker on. Sunday Night Football, just keep an eye.
You think he's going to throw a pass?
There's something weird going on, you know?
Just, Townsend gets it, flips it over to Butker, and he wings it?
Or he catches the pass from Townsend on a long fake field goal. I don't know. Just saying. Last time we had a special teams guy on the show, something crazy happened.
Speaking of things that have come up on the show, yesterday you actually said something, and I want, you know, and we don't always agree on something, but there was something you said, I don't know, if maybe you took it far enough, but maybe it has to be taken farther. You had talked about breakout players, and you mentioned specifically you thought your breakout post player or post-buy player was going to be Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
Yeah, I think so, for
I
sure.
I am convinced he is going to have a big final stretch for the team. It's part of the reason I was willing to say what I told you earlier, that I think they're going to win out the rest of their regular season games. If you actually go back and watch the last couple of games Clyde Edwards-Helaire was playing in, when this offensive line was clicking, when the offense was starting to get, he played really well. They hit their stall right when Clyde got hurt, Alex, like right at that time. That's when the offense went through the rut and they had to rediscover themselves, and Mahomes had happy feet and the whole thing. Clyde Edwards-Helaire helps this offense be better, but more importantly, he was playing the best football of any time he had played in Kansas City outside of what? The first 2 weeks, his rookie season, when they fed him the ball a lot. Clyde Edwards-Helaire is going to be an incredibly important player for the final 6 weeks. And another reason why is because the entire time Clyde Edwards-Helaire was out, they didn't find an option they liked better. They tried everyone. They tried McColl. They tried Byron. They've tried Josh Gordon. They've tried every single other player on their team to be like the next guy up and found no one. Clyde Edwards-Helaire is in for a big second half. Post-bye week.
You know obviously how I feel about this, because we did. I think Willie Gay was the answer for Nick as far as post-bye week breakout players. But Clyde was playing so well before the injury. I know overall there's, you know, the draft pick selection of Clyde, still people are down on that, and they didn't ever agree with the fact that the Chiefs drafted a running back and all that. But let's not forget where the yards per carry and how Clyde was performing before that unfortunate injury in that Sunday night game against the Buffalo Bills. I mean, he had over 100 yards rushing in both the two prior games to that. And then in his first game back against the Cowboys, had a nice yard per carry average as well. So I do think he's in for a big, for him, second half, even though it's post-bye week, second half of the season. I think that has to be the expectation. And frankly, there's no reason why he shouldn't. And
everything's in place for him. The offense is going better now. I know it's not perfect, but the offense is going better now. The offensive line now knows what it's doing. You're healthy now, right? Because the Chiefs don't rush anybody back. They give you a full bye week after a light workload. Like, you should be 100% ready to go. No questions asked. And on it, like, I know it's the dump, but like, you're fresher than everybody else. Like, I know you were recovering from the injury.
His legs look fresh against the Cowboys. I mean, he did. He seemed to have a little bit more of a burst than some of the other guys.
For a guy who I thought it sometimes this season looked like he was running in quicksand, that's not the way it looked when he came back. And it's not the way it looked the final 2 weeks of the regular season before he eventually got injured. Because that was the first month, and you're like, whoo, you don't look very quick. You don't look very fast. And then once things got rolling, it seemed like he was going to make a difference. And as much as we like, you know, Daryl and I guess Jerick McKinnon, or even the brief moments of Gore we've seen.
McKinnon, unfortunately, on IR, though, done for the year. So they definitely need Daryl Williams and Clyde to make sure. I mean, for the most part, Those were the guys anyway.
And those guys all have a part, but Clyde should be a primary back. Like, I'm talking 80% of the carries kind of back the rest of the way. Like, they need him to be that kind of player because he has a legitimate chance to be the difference between winning a Super Bowl or not. Not that he'll win the Super Bowl for them, but the percentage he takes them to the point they need to be, that 1%, that makes a huge difference in the NFL playoffs. It makes a huge difference for the rest of the regular season and going forward. Like, so to me, that small variance is what could make a huge swing for Kansas City.
Coming up in 10 minutes, one national publication came up with their biggest problem still remaining for the Chiefs. We'll see if we agree with that, and it's actually kind of a surprising one, and maybe also tells you just how good of a spot the Chiefs are in the rest of the way. But now it's official. We knew this day would come for baseball, the way things were trending, going back to even during the COVID negotiations between the players and the owners. You knew things likely wouldn't get worked out before a lockout could occur. Well, now it's true. Baseball is officially in a lockout. Players are locked out of the facility. Not that they were doing anything in December anyway, so I don't think there's any reason to panic, as we've talked about throughout the week.
But also, just so you know, the owners don't have to technically do a lockout. Nothing in their collective bargaining says, if we don't agree by this time,
this is what
we lock the gates.
But you know, this is what happens, right? Whether it's baseball union or not, like when a deal's not done by a work stoppage, potentially all that kind of stuff can come into play. I don't think anybody should be worried until we get to spring training. It is funny if you look at baseball and how they scrub everybody from their websites and stuff. It's hilarious, though, in a way. Come on now. It is kind of funny.
Yes.
Like, it's a lockout, and so no longer do the players exist on the websites in terms of photos or anything like that. And no articles featuring players are available or anything whatsoever. But this is going to be a lot of back and forth and gamesmanship. It's the same way and how annoyed we all got during the COVID stuff where the players and the owners were fighting and everybody's pitting each other against each other. Like, that is all going to occur for the next month, two
same
months,
line?
3 months. It's going to be the exact same crap that annoys all of us. And at some point, and maybe you're already there, we're all going to be sitting here and saying, I don't care what you're asking for anymore. Just figure out a way to make sure you don't miss any games and opening day happens on time.
We know that that's what they're going to, that's what the owners are hoping for. You'll get tired of it. And the players will just have to agree, because if you miss games, it's a huge problem. I know baseball's saying that's not a huge problem. Massive problem. You can miss as much offseason as you want, and no one will make a big deal. One huge issue remains for baseball that they absolutely refuse. So the union, Rob Manfred today, he spoke. He's an idiot. He's terrible at his job, and we know that. I've established that, or at least I know that. He's back in the blame game. He's like, the union wants a $100 million reduction in revenue sharing. And the biggest problem with baseball is the NFL, the NBA, MLS, the National Women's Soccer League, if you are NHL, if you are a professional sports league in this country, we know how much you make. Therefore, revenue sharing is a very easy thing to do. You know what baseball doesn't do? Open up their books to anyone, which means they, like, you know, baseball players can't say we want 50% of the pie because they don't know what 50% of the pie is. Baseball will claim they're already getting that, claim they're getting more than that. Then why not open your books and prove it? Because they know that's not true. And so everything they're negotiating on is made up on an imaginary number. Because they'll continue to tell you the same things people want to tell you nationally. Baseball dying. People aren't coming to the ballpark. We're losing money. Like, all you have to do, but Clint Scholes, who covers minor league baseball for the Royals, he actually made a really good point. He puts out a Patreon. Like, this is all you need to know about baseball owners and how much money there is in it, Gold. Is 15 years ago, Frank McCourt had owned the Dodgers for all of 7 years. He ran it horribly. He had to borrow money to pay players. He had to do all that, like, horribly. He ran them awful into the ground. He made $1.6 billion off of the sale after just 7 years of owning them, and still get some of the money from land rights sale around the stadium, and still get some of the parking money. It's like, that's like, there's no losing money in Major League Baseball. It's impossible. And the owners think we don't know that, and that's the issue I have with this. Yes, yeah, I think sometimes the players can go too far with it, but it's ridiculous.
Yeah, there's the TV contracts, as we know, and it's now with all these sports, despite them for years, you know, acting like sports betting was the worst thing on earth, now they love it because they're all getting fat checks from all these sports books and these gaming partners.
It's only going up.
And it's just the start of that. Like, this is just the beginning. Even, like, just the official sports book partner of blank, that's just the beginning. Wait till there's more involvement in the actual television broadcast. That's why Bally's is interesting.
That's made it inside the stadium.
Of course, all of that is going to be more and more revenue for the owners. But they're just going to, like, just prepare. I think we all know how the feeling was just a year and a half or so ago with the players and the owners and the back and forth and how everybody was pitting each other against each other on that whole deal. It's gonna be that, but worse for the next month at least. Let's see what happens once we get towards spring training. That's like, I don't expect anything to happen before January, February, March. Nothing's happening anytime soon. Yeah. They met for 7 minutes yesterday, Cody. 7 minutes. They all knew nothing was happening before the deadline.
The problem baseball players have, and, like, you know, like guys like Witt or whoever's on the Max Scherzer, the guys who are gonna argue for the sizes, they want competitive balance, right? They don't want teams to be able, they don't want these teams who can just tank and pay prospects, because there are four teams who are projected to have a smaller payroll next year than Max Scherzer will make for just one team. And that's a problem. But the players want a salary floor, but don't want a salary cap. And they're the only league without a salary cap. So, like, the argument, like, honestly, this is the only argument that I have that doesn't make sense for the players is you're asking them to not put a hard floor on how little they can spend, but you're the only league who doesn't put a hard cap on how much they can't. There's a soft cap, right? Because the luxury tax makes it so cost prohibitive sometimes. There is still a soft cap. Fine. Then make a financial punishment for being below a certain salary. Soft floor, soft cap is the only way you can do this. Because if you ask for a floor, they're going to want a cap. Like, and that's the problem the players are going to have to deal
with. This is why there's
over
an
the next
issue.
Six
with,
weeks. That's why there's a huge labor disagreement.
That's why there's this major collective bargaining that has to take place. The one thing I think, no matter how this turns out, will happen in some form or fashion, expanded playoffs, is that no matter what, it's happening. It just is.
It's printing money for the owners.
Whether it's actually 14 teams or not, whether it's going to be the idea that I think you and I both love, which is letting the division winners pick their opponent, because the drama with that is incredible. One way or the other, expanded playoffs will be part of this. And right
put
now,
it on
as
TV
we sit right
make
here,
the managers say who he's going to choose.
As we sit right here now, are you worried that we have opening day on time? Because I'm not.
Not yet.
Again, spring training is really the when you got
to
check
me,
back in.
Late January. Yeah, talk to me like late
pitchers,
January, and I might be worried.
A week before pitchers or catchers report, then that's our scheduled report. That's when it gets interesting. Coming up next, we get back to the Chiefs. One national publication says they have the Chiefs' biggest problem. We'll tell you what it is next.
Cody and Gold, weekdays 10 to 2, 610 Sports Radio.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.